Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Say hello to a new era of mental health care. Cerebral is here to help you achieve your mental wellness goals with professional therapy and medication management support. 100% online. You'll experience the all-new Cerebral way, an innovative approach to mental wellness designed around you. You'll get a personalized treatment plan from a therapist, prescriber, or both in a safe and judgment-free space. Your Cerebral therapist or prescriber will outline a customized plan with clear milestones along the way, so you can get to feeling your best. Sign up today at Cerebral.com/podcast and use code ACAST to get 15% off your first month. Offer only valid on monthly plans. Other exclusions may apply. Offer ends April 30th. See site for details.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
From Tant que je serai, I'm Tipora, and this is the podcast Tant que je serai noire. A series of episodes that question Black women's desire and non-desire to have children. In this podcast, my guests are challenging social and cultural norms to push people to discover different points of views and to think differently. Like me, at the young age of 16, my guest, Orna Donna, knew with certainty that she would never be a mother. Orna Donna, a doctor of sociology who studied the field of non-motherhood, motherhood, and regret. She is a social activist and the writer of the book Regretting Motherhood, published in 2015, which was translated into 14 languages. To Orna, this self-realization of not being a mother was not as extraordinary as society would want her to believe. To her, it was something normal, just as common as choosing to become a mother. Another interesting point is the fact that there are women out there who have become mothers and now regret the decision. And that is so taboo and so stigmatized that it's rarely spoken about. With Orna, we talked about the social pressures around motherhood, the stigma around regret, and why it's such a sensitive subject for mothers. I am so happy to have the opportunity to discuss with such an interesting woman. So thank you, Orna. And now I'll let you enjoy this wonderful episode.
My name is Orna Donat. I'm a doctor of sociology here in Israel. For the last 17 years, I think I study the area of non-motherhood and motherhood here in Israel. And my first study was about Jewish Israeli men and women, mainly women who don't want to be parents. And when I ended my first study, which became as a book, my first book here in Israel. There was one sentence that kept troubling me, and that's the certain promise to people who don't want to be parents, that you will surely regret it. And especially towards women, you will surely regret it. And I saw it then as a political usage of emotions, that society tries to frighten us and to scare us from this horrifying a human thing of regret, because it's quite human to regret things that we have done. So society tries to use it in order to align us into being mothers. And so I decided to write my PhD at my doctoral studies about this triangle of regret, non-parenthood, parenthood, and society. And I needed to make it more narrow because I couldn't write everything about it. So I decided to write only about women who regret becoming mothers.
Okay.
So I interviewed 23 Israeli mothers, and I interviewed also 10 men who regret becoming fathers, but I couldn't put it in my study because it was too wide already. So I wrote this book. This book is based on my doctoral, the PhD that I wrote.
This book is so magic. When I read it, I felt so close to this woman, because in reality, if those women had the choice, they might have been child-free like us.
Yeah. I got a lot of messages from different countries, from women who don't want to be mothers. So I think this book gave something to different situations in life, because it gave some kind of a relief to women who regret becoming mothers, and also to women who don't regret but do have difficulties and hardships in their motherhood, and also for women who don't want to be mothers, who felt like they have something has echoed their thoughts without the need to become mothers themselves. Like, it's like seeing something from the other side of this decision.
It's like a mirror of what they could have been. Now, if you want, I'm going to read some impactful sentences from your book. The first one is, l'état de mère n'est pas un rôle, mais une relation humaine parmi d'autres. Motherhood is not a role, but a human relationship among others. When I read that, I was like, wow, this is so accurate. Can you please explain us what you meant by writing that?
Something about, because I give there a reference to something that I read about motherhood not being a role or a job, but a relationship. And I joined this thought because it seems to me so honest and so even I don't know, even kind of groundbreaking to pull motherhood back to earth, like a magical kingdom. And it is a very short way to treat mothers as goddess on earth and not as human beings. And they are human beings, and they make mistake, and they sometimes confused, and they don't know. And if we will not see mothers as human beings, suffer will be all around to them and to their children, and then to society as a whole. And I think we need to pull it back into intersubjective relationship. When you get into this relationship, this is quite unique, that you don't know with whom you're going to be involved for the rest of your life. And from there on, we are subjects. And we can have all the emotions that this kind of a relationship can, and maybe if we will understand it as a relationship, we will be able to listen to what mothers are saying and not treat them as kind of an icons or something that is beyond the human, and we are seeing them as objects.
I fully agree with you, Orna. While you were talking, I was thinking, but do we judge men, and exactly men regret, the same way as women regret?
I interviewed only 10 men, so I can't really say something that is a generalization about men. I think that for now, it is still shameful all around, but maybe, but for women, it creates a lot of guilt. And also shame, yes, as well. Because we are being told that it is natural for us to want to be mothers, to love being mothers, and love our children. You are assigned as female, and society thinks that that your female sex says something about you, about your dreams, capability, disabilities, yearnings, needs, and like it's a, like biology codes everything about our personality, etc. And that's not true. What can I say? That's not true. We are different from each other. Even if both of us, we were being told that we are female and women, I guess we can make now a list about the things that we are, maybe we are the same, and other things that we are quite different about what we want in life, what we are able to do in life. I'm putting society's limitation aside, but within ourselves, and we are not the same just because we have the same sex organ, and it narrows our liberty, this kind of perception about us.
A reminder, because when I started the podcast, I started interviewing only Black women, because as Black women, our relationship with motherhood is slightly different from the one of a white woman or an Asian woman, for example. And inside a community or a group, you also have a lot of different stories.
You know, this is really interesting, because if we like make the junction with society, then along the history, I think that also here in Israel, Black women, Ethiopian women here in Israel, were not giving the liberty to have babies as much as they want. They were so many times being oppressed about their ability to have children, because society doesn't necessarily want a certain kind of group to reproduce. So I was told once that this that me dealing with the option of not being a mother, it's quite white and a white feminism. But I think we need to look at the picture as a whole, because we need to see what society did against Black women. And then Black women should say what they, because you are different within, you are diverse within, and me as a white woman is diverse within white women, and then you are not the same, all of you are not the same, otherwise I will make an essentialist reclaim on you, like saying all the Black women would like to reproduce and would like to be mothers because they were being oppressed. So we need to hold these two sides of it. Exactly. I hope that I managed to be precise in my intention, because it's in English, so it's more difficult for me, but I hope I'm being understood with what I'm saying.
You're saying that it will be easy to generalize and say that in response to all the birth control politics toward Black women in Israel, all Black women could say, okay, then I decide today to be a mother. And you are also saying that the idea is to take into account the history and how the society treats them, and then let them decide whether or no they want to become a mother.
Yeah, I think we must look at the oppression against against certain women from a specific social group. We must see and address this oppression. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, we must listen to what women themselves are saying in order not to generalize all Black women, all white women.
It's like there is like two rules, only two rules, becoming a mother or not becoming a mother. What is your advice to a woman who is hesitating?
In the last 5 years, I'm conducting groups for women who are uncertain whether to become mothers or not. Each summer, I meet with the group and for 10 weeks, we meet and talk about this uncertainty. Okay. Of course, I don't have an opinion about it, and I just want to give a room to talk and to honor the uncertainty and to, because most of the time, women, at least here in Israel, say that they don't have a room to discuss and other women to discuss about this uncertainty because everything is so binaric in our society. Mm. Like either you know you want to be a mother or otherwise you know you don't want to be a mother. But what about all the women in the middle? So I don't have an advice. I just want to welcome the situation of not knowing. And, you know, in neoliberal and capitalist society, we all the time cherish the knowing, the marking of destination and getting there and running and conquering and everything. And I want to go against it. And I want to have a room to not knowing, to be confused, to let yourself, to give yourself time. Think this phrase of take your time. Take, you are the owner of your time to consider it and to listen to yourself. And I think that many women know themselves very well, but we are being disturbed in hearing what we know about ourselves. We know. I knew since I was 16 that I will not be a mother. And I knew it because I realized that I need time to just look at the wall, you know, just be with myself. Or I don't want this, I don't have this dream. I don't have this dream of raising children. So I knew myself since I was 16, what do I need for my well-being? And I think that so many times society, the noise is so loud that we are being disturbed and we are being distanced from knowing something about ourselves. So I know it's really hard not to listen to all this noise. I know I'm not saying it's easy, but I guess that is the only way we have in order to live our lives as much as we want to.
Your body or your sexuality. I mean, for all the most intimate topics in our life, most of us need time to know it. Even if we have access to a lot of information nowadays, it is so difficult to know yourself and what you really want.
Yeah, because the prices are so high and so heavy if you are not aligned and not being considered as a good woman. It's really harsh. I know it. It's really, really harsh. And as you said, also about our sexuality, our bodies, the things we want or don't want to do in life. We are being judged so harshly.
Yeah.
So I'm not, I think the thing here is not about like choice, because it's really hard to make this choice. I think that just need to find the phrasing. if we will understand the power relations and the social structures who tries to oppress us, then maybe we will have more liberty and more room to maneuver. It's not something that only within, like, you need to make a choice, not that this kind of like feminism that everything, not everything is our choice. You know, we are being praised for choosing many times, as long as we choose as society wants us to choose. Then we are being praised and glorified. But we need to understand all the nuances in the power relations and social structures, and to look at it in the eyes. And then we have more room to maneuver. And then we can also make decisions that, I don't know, might be seem as not feminist. Like, I don't know, to put this on the fingers, on the, you know, something. But I know all the... I can hear and I can see all the capitalist power on me, all the beauty ideals on me, all the chauvinist and sexist messages on me. Okay, so I see it all, and now I want to be the owner of what I want to do and not to do. Now I have more tools in order to decide whether to go.
It's the process of deconstruction.
Many words I said without saying what you exactly deconstruct.
But it's hard, and I'd say thank you to authors like you who use their time to do the work for us, because, I mean, we can rely on you, we can then read the book and have some tools to deconstruct ourselves. So thank you again.
Wow, thank you. That means the world to me, what you said now. Because, yeah... On one hand, also in Israel, we are being totally pressured into motherhood. But on the other side, I still have the ability to decide not to be a mother. Nobody like shoot me or kills me because of that. So that's a kind of a relief that I can live. But we must all the time remember that not all of us, and then we are not all of, as long as not all of us are free, there is more work to be done. Yeah.
In the book is when you interview grandmothers talking about regret. When I was reading it, I would say that it was a bit disturbing for me, because I had this wrong image that all grandmothers were happy to have grandchildren. So my question is, was it easy for this woman to talk?
I interviewed 23 mothers, and 5 of them are also grandmothers. So they talked from the point of view of a mother and also from a grandmother point of view. One of them said to me that at least now she can enjoy the grandchildren. So she regrets becoming a mother, but there is a kind of a good thing for her, and that is the grandchildren. But others said that for them, it's like never-ending story. After you raise your children, and maybe you have more time to yourself and to deal with all the losses that you suffer, now they are being expected to be also a good grandmother. It's not only the good mother paradigm, it's also the good grandmother. And like they are feeling suffocated from it. And some of them who are not grandmothers said to me that they hope that their children will not have grandchildren, because they don't want it to go to another round. Now, once again. That's, I can understand why it is disturbing. And also it's so logic for me and human to hear what they are saying, because they can't stand it anymore to give so many things and not be the owners of their lives, for their time, what is really interesting for them to do. You know, you think, okay, I raised children and now I'm 60 years old. Okay, now I will have a time for myself at last. Mm-hmm. And no, the expectations is now it's a chapter number two.
And you know what? Now I would love to hear stories about child-free elderly women.
You know, something interesting. I'm now conducting a new study here in Israel about elderly women who are not mothers. And I interviewed already 26 or 27. And the older, the eldest is 86 years old. Mm-hmm. And what was, you know, I didn't start writing it yet and to think about, but I think about it like here and there, but I didn't start to sit and write. But one of my thoughts and understandings is that many of them said to me that no one said anything to them for not being mothers. So maybe our generation suffer even more sayings because of the social networks, because we talk about everything. They were not treated badly for it. Maybe behind their back, people thought, well, she's a strange lady. She probably will be the crazy cat lady if she will not become a mother. But they didn't feel it on a daily basis, yeah, as maybe we do. So that's a really interesting thing to think about. Maybe, I don't know, maybe like generally saying for them, it was easier than for us. Because now we can see on Facebook, on Twitter and Instagram, what everybody thinks of us. And they didn't have this kind of exposure to what everybody thinks of them. So I don't know. That's a thing that's a thing I want to write and think more about it.
Because usually we see progress and we think, well, it was worse before, but in this case, it's really interesting to get another point of view. And sometimes I'm also thinking that it's maybe because we have too many choices that at the end we are lost. What do you think?
First, there is a book of, I don't know how to say it, but Erich Fromm, the book of escaping freedom. Like we don't know, we want freedom, but we don't know how to deal with it. Yeah. It's a lot of pressure being responsible and accountable for everything we do. So I can totally understand it. For me, I can't say something, you know, to you. You must decide what it freedom means to you. For me, I truly prefer it, and I prefer dealing with all the confusion and maybe sometimes being stuck in one place than to being oppressed and being something will be forced on me. Yeah. For me,
in the book, you talk about regretting motherhood. And now I would like to see and to hear you about regretting not having kids.
I prefer being confused, not knowing where to go, maybe make mistakes. Zygmunt Bauman is a sociologist, very important sociologist. And he said that one part of being liberated is being to have the ability to make mistakes, to being wrong. That's part of being, and maybe if we will not treat mistakes so badly and so harshly, we will have an option to be confused without being frozen or afraid so much.
Right. And it's really interesting to see the idea of like it's good to make mistakes, Because in some societies, you don't have the possibility, you have only one child. And this is a question related to the next one, which is, we talk about regretting motherhood in your book. And there is also a lot of women who are afraid of being, regretting of not having kids. Like, okay, I'm 30 today, I don't want kids, but maybe in 10 years I will be like,
ah. Yeah. So I say, I'm being asked a lot if I'm not afraid of being regretful some days. And I say two things. First, maybe I will regret. So we regret so many things in life. Why did I get married? Why didn't I get married? Why did I get married with this person and not the other person? Why did I make this tattoo? Why did I make this tattoo here and not there? Why didn't I go study this and not? Regret is a part of human living, and it's a part of being subject. So yes, maybe, I don't want to say no, I will surely not regret it. I guess my guess is that I will not regret it, but if I will regret it, so be it. I will need to deal with what regret will bring into my life and my inner world. I can't and I won't be a mother now only because of the possibility that maybe someday I will regret it, because it will make me miserable. It will make me miserable. I have one life to live, at this state, and I'm trying not to be miserable. Of course, I can't prevent it because life has its course and it brings all sorts of things.
Yeah.
But I try to do the best. And if I will be miserable because I will regret later on, then I will have to deal with it. I will have to live alongside my regret.
Well, I'm like you. Like, today I'm 100% sure that I'm sure about my choice of not being a mother. But sometimes the society, the judgment, are so present so that you can start doubting yourself. And what you said is a very good reminder, because it is one choice among others. So I'm not afraid, but sometimes, like when you are at a family dinner and you hear a question like, are you sure? I think that you might regret it. Then you just say, no, I'm sure, really, don't worry about me. And then there is this small voice, and this small voice is like, are you sure? Are you really sure?
You know, it's really interesting. I wrote about it also in the book, that we are being expected to feel regret after we make a crime, or we are considered to make a sin. But then regret is being so demonized. Is it the word demonized? Like, it's the most horrible thing that can ever happen to you. Well, people live with regret. People live alongside their regret. So, and I totally understand what you are saying. That's why I said before that this is a political usage of emotion. Because I met so many women who said to me, I don't want to be a mother, but I guess I will be, because I'm really, really scared about the future. So that's the trying to scare us from the future is really effective.
Yes.
Really, really effective. That's why it's effective. It works for me. And I understand women who are so afraid, because it's one of our fears as human beings, of being alone, of not having someone to talk to. But who promised us that if we will become parents, we will have someone to talk to, or that we will not be alone? So everything can happen. Everything, also to parents. Everything can happen. And I totally believe that there are people who truly want to be parents, and that's great. Mm. I'm just saying, not all of us. That's all.
Exactly. So now it's time, I think time is running, and I think it's time to put an end to the interview. So I don't know if you want to add something else to close the interview.
Just to tell you once again, thank you for this talk. It's really meaningful to me as well. And I think that many things more can be said. And also to think about it from about women who are poor, about women who are religious, about women who are bisexual, trans, so many aspects to it. So I hope it will give like the chance to explore it more, what we said here.
Thank you, Orna, for this episode. Thank you, Aldre, for the editing. And see you in 2 weeks for a new episode.